Osho, Vigyan Bhairav Tantra, Volume 1, The Book of the Secrets, A New Commentary. Discourse number 28, given in Bombay, India.
The first question. A depression becomes an automatic reaction in our bodies and minds, so that we don't even recognize or don't want to it anymore. How can we learn to tell between false image and real in ourselves? Faces are false. You don't have any real face. That's why the question arises, which is false and which is real. If you have the real, then you know. The question never arises. Because all the faces are unreal, false. You don't have any comparison to make. You don't know the real. That's the difficulty. You have not seen the real, and the real is not seen naturally. Much effort is needed to find it out. In Zen, they say the real is the original face. The face you had before your birth, or the face you will have after your death. That means all the faces in life, so-called life, are false. How to find it out? What is the real face? You will have to go back before your birth. That's the only way to find out the real face. Because the moment you are born, you have started being false. You have started being false because it pays to be false. The child is born and he has started to be a politician. The moment he is related to the world, to the parents, to the family, he is in politics. And now he has to take care about his faces. He will smile as a bribery. He will try to find out in what ways he should behave so he is accepted more, loved more, appreciated more. And sooner or later he will find that which is condemned by the parents, by the family. He could start repressing it. And the false has entered. So all the faces you have are false. So don't try to find out the real one in your present faces. They are all false, similarly false. Useful. That's why they have been adopted. Utilitarian, but not true. And the deepest deception is that whenever you become aware that your faces are false, you will create another face which you will think as the real. For example, a person who lives in the ordinary life, in the ordinary world, business, family, he comes to realize his falseness, the whole inauthenticity of life. So he renounces it, becomes a sannyasin, leaves the world, and he may be thinking that now the faith is real. It is again a false faith. It has been adopted as a reaction of other faces. And by reaction, you can never get to the real. Reacting to a false face, you will create another false face. So what is to be done? The real is not something which has to be achieved. The false is your achievement. The real is not to be something achieved. It is not something to be cultivated. It is something to be discovered. It is already there. You need not try to attain it, because your any effort will lead to some other false faith. For a false faith, effort is needed. It has to be cultivated. For the real faith, you have not to do anything. It is already there. If you simply leave your clinging to the false faces, the false will drop, and that which is real will remain. When you have nothing to drop, when only that which cannot be dropped is there, you will come to realize what is real. Meditation is the way to drop the false faces. That's why so much insistence to be thoughtless, because without thought, you cannot create a false face. In a thoughtless state of awareness, you will be real. Because it is thought, basically, which creates false faces and masks. When there is no thought, there can be no face. You will be faceless or with the real face. And both mean the same. So be aware of your thought process. Don't fight with it. Don't repress it. Simple awareness, the thoughts are there just like clouds in the sky, and you are looking at them with no prejudice, neither for nor against. If you are against, you will be fighting, and every fight will create a new thought process. If you are for them, you will forget yourself, and you will flow in the current of the thought process. You will not be there as a conscious witness. If you are far, you will be in the process. If you are against, you will create another process in reaction. Don't be far and don't be against. Allow the thoughts to move. Let them go wherever they are going. Be in a deep let go. And simply witness. Whatsoever is passing, witness. Don't judge. Don't say this is good, this is bad. Don't say if the thought of a divine being comes, don't say beautiful. The moment you say this, you are identified with it. And you are cooperating with the thought process. You are helping it. You are giving energy to it, you are feeding it. And if you are feeding, it can never drop. Or if there is a thought, a sexual thought, don't say this is bad, this is sin. Because when you say this is sin, you have created another series of thoughts. Sex is also a thought. Sin is also a thought. God is also a thought. Neither be far nor against. Simply look with unprejudiced eyes, just watching indifferently. This will take time because our mind is so much occupied with notions that it is very difficult. The moment we see something, we have judged it. We don't wait. Not a single moment's gap. You see a flower and you have already said it is beautiful. In the very seeing, the interpretation comes in. So you will have to be constantly aware to drop this mechanical habit of judging. You see a face and you have already judged ugly, good, bad, or anything else. This judgment has become so deep-rooted that we cannot see anything simply. The mind enters immediately. It becomes an interpretation. It is not a simple vision. It becomes interpretation. Don't interpret. Simply see. Sit down in a relaxed posture or lie down. Close your eyes and allow your thoughts to move. If you say bad, if you condemn, then you start repressing them. Then you are not allowing them to move independently. That's why so much need of dreams. Because whatsoever you are repressing in the day, you will have to release it in the night. Because that repressed goes on forcing expression. It needs expression. So whatsoever you repress, you dream. Dreams are cathartic. Now, the modern sleep research says that you can be deprived of sleep and nothing much harm will result. But you cannot be deprived of your dreams. The old idea that sleep is very necessary have been found false. Instead of sleep, dreams are very necessary. And sleep is necessary only because you cannot dream without sleep. They have developed techniques, and now it can be judged from the outside whether you are dreaming or simply asleep. If you are simply asleep, they will disturb the sleep whole night. When you are dreaming, they will allow. When you are not dreaming, they will disturb the sleep. No bad results comes out of it. But when you are dreaming and they disturb, and they allow you to sleep when you are not dreaming, within 3 days, you begin to feel dizzy. Within 7 days, you feel deep uneasiness. Your body, mind both feel ill. And within 3 weeks, you will feel a certain type of insanity. What happens? Because dreams are cathartic. If they are not allowed and you go on repressing in the day and they are not allowed to be expressed, they are accumulated in you. And that accumulation of repression is insanity. In meditation, you are not to repress any thought. But it is difficult because your whole mind consists of judgments, theories, isms, religions, cults. So one who is very deeply obsessed with any idea, philosophy, religion, cannot really enter meditation. Difficult. Because his obsession will become the barrier. So if you are a Christian or a Hindu or a Jain, it is difficult for you to enter meditation. Because your philosophy gives you judgments. This is good and that's not good. This has to be repressed. This is not to be allowed. All philosophies are repressive. And all religions, all ideologies are repressive. Because they give you interpretation. They don't allow you to see life as it is. They force interpretations over it. One who wants to go deep in meditation has to be aware of this nonsense of ideology. Just be a simple man, with no philosophy, with no attitude towards life. Just be a seeker, one who is in inquiry, deep inquiry to know what life is. Don't force any ideology over and above it. It is very easy then to move into meditation. Because of this, the greatest meditator the world has ever known, Gautam Buddha, insisted that no ideology is needed, no philosophy is needed, no concepts about life are needed. Whether God is or is not is meaningless, irrelevant. Whether moksha exists or not is meaningless. Whether your soul is immortal or not is meaningless. Buddha was so much anti-philosophic, not because he was anti-philosophic, but because anti-philosophy can become basic ground for a meditator to jump into the unknown. Philosophy means knowing something about the unknown without knowing it. Preconceptions, hypotheses, constructed, man-constructed ideologies. This is to be remembered as a very foundational fact. Don't judge. Let the mind flow easily. As the river flows, let the mind flow. You'll be just sitting on the bank watching. And this watching should be pure without any interpretation. Sooner or later, when the water has flown, when the repressed ideas have moved, you will find gaps coming. A thought will go and another thought will not be coming, and there will be a gap, an interval. In that interval, nothingness happens. In that interval, you will have the first glimpse of your real face, or the original face. Because when there is no thought, there is no society. When there is no thought, there is no other. When there is no other, no society, you need not have any faith. Thoughtlessness is faithlessness. In that interval, when one thought has gone and another has not appeared, in that interval, for the first time, you know in reality what is your face, the face you had when you were not born, and the face you will have when you will die. All life faces are false. And once you know this real face, once you feel this inner nature, Buddhists call Buddha Swabhava, the nature of the inner Buddha. When you come to feel this inner nature, even once, a single glimpse, and you will be a different man. Because now you will constantly know what is false and what is real. Now you have the criterion. Now you can compare. And there will be no need to ask what is real and what is unreal. The question comes only because you don't know what is real. And whatsoever you know is all unreal. Only through meditation you will be able to learn what is false image and what is a real authentic face. Of course, the mind is automatic, and whatsoever you have done has become mechanical. How to break this mechanicalness? The first thing to be understood, mechanicalness is a necessity of life. And your body has an inner mechanism. Colin Wilson has called it the inner robot. You have a robot within you. Once trained, once you are trained in anything, that training is passed to the robot. You can call it memory, you can call it mind, anything. But the word robot is good, because it is absolutely mechanical, automatic, it functions in its own way. You are learning driving. When you are learning, while learning, you will have to be aware, alert, the danger is there. You don't know how to drive, anything can happen, you will be alert. That's why learning is so painful. One has to be alert constantly. When you have learned driving, the learning has been given to the robot part of your mind. Now you can go on smoking, singing, listening to the radio, or talking to the friend, or even loving to the girlfriend. You can go on doing anything, and the robot part of your being will drive. You will not be needed. You are relieved of the burden. The robot will do everything. You will not even remember where to turn. You need not. The robot will do. Where to turn, where to stop, where not to stop, what to do and not to do. You are not needed. You are relieved of the job. The robot is doing. If something very sudden happens, some accident or something, the robot cannot tackle, because it is not trained in it. Only then you will be needed. Suddenly there will be a jerk in your body, the robot will be replaced and you will come in its place. You can feel that jerk. When suddenly you feel one accident is going to happen, there is a jerk inside. The robot has moved away. It has given place to you. Now you are driving, but the accident is avoided. Again, the robot will take, you will relax, and robot will drive. And this is necessary for life, because so many things to do, so many things, and if there is no robot to do them, you will not be capable to do them at all. So robot is needed. It is a necessity. I am not against the robot. Go and give to the robot whatsoever you learn, but remain the master. allow the robot to become the master. That's the problem. The robot will try because the robot will become more efficient than you. Sooner or later, the robot will try to be the master. And he will say to you, you be completely retired. You are not needed. I can do things more efficiently. Remain the master. So what can be done to remain the master of the robot? One thing, and only one thing, is possible. And that is, sometimes, without any danger, take reins in your hands. Sometimes, without any danger, take reins in your hands. Tell the robot to relax, come in the seat, drive the car. Without any danger. Because in danger, again, it is automatic. The jerk and the replacement of the robot by you is automatic. You are driving, suddenly, with no necessity, tell the robot to relax. You come in the seat and drive the car. You are walking. Suddenly, remember, tell the body that now I will walk consciously. The robot is not allowed. I'm in the seat and I will drive the body consciously. You are hearing me. It is robot part which is hearing. Suddenly, give a jerk to it. Don't allow the mind to come in. Hear me directly, consciously. What do I mean when I say hear consciously? When you are hearing unconsciously, you are focused on me and you have forgotten yourself completely. I exist, the speaker exists, but the listener is unconscious. You are not aware of yourself as the listener. When I say take the reins in your hand, I mean be aware of two points, the speaker and the listener. And if you are aware of two points, the speaker and the listener, you have become the third, the witness. This witnessing will help you to remain the master. And if you are the master, your robot cannot disturb your life. It is disturbing your life. Your total life has become a mess because of this robot. It helps, it is efficient, so it goes on taking everything from you. Even those things which should not be given to it. You have fallen in love. It is beautiful in the beginning because it is not given to the robot yet. You are learning. You are alive, aware, alert, and love has a beauty. But sooner or later, the robot will take it over. You will become a husband or a wife, and you have given charge to the robot. Now you will say to your wife, I love you. You are not saying it. The robot, the gramophone record, now it is a recorded thing. You are just playing it again and again. And you will understand it. Because whenever your robot says, I love, it means nothing. And when your wife will say to you, I love you, you know it is nothing. Because a sentence given by a gramophone record only creates noise. It makes no sense. There is no sense in it. Then you will do everything and you are not doing it. Then love becomes a burden. One even wants to escape from love. All your feelings, all your relations are now directed by the robot. That's why sometimes you insist not to do a certain thing, but the robot insists to do it. because the robot is trained in it, and you are always a failure, and the robot succeeds. You say, I am not going to be angry again. But your saying is meaningless, because the robot is trained, and the train is long. And just a sentence in the mind that I am not going to be angry again will not make any effect on it. It is a long, trained thing. So whenever next day someone will insult you, your decision not to be angry will be of no help. The robot will take immediately charge. And the robot will do whatsoever it is trained to do. And then in the end, when the robot has done, you will repent. But the difficulty is this, that even this repentance is done by the robot. Because you have always done that. After anger, you have repented. The robot has learned that trick also. It will repent. And again, you will do the same. That's why many times you feel that you have done something, said something, behaved in a certain way, in spite of yourself. This word, in spite of yourself, what does it mean? It means there is another self within you which can act, do something in spite of you. Who is that self? The robot. What to do? Don't take vows that I will not be angry again. They are self-defeative. They will not lead you anywhere. Rather, on the contrary, whatsoever you are doing, do it consciously, take charge from the robot. Any ordinary thing, eating, eat consciously. Don't do it mechanically as you have done every day. Smoking, smoke consciously. Don't allow your hand to move to the packet. Don't bring the cigarette unconsciously. Be conscious, alert. And there is a difference. I can raise my hands this way, mechanically. Just without any awareness, I can raise my hand with full awareness flowing in my hand. Try it. You will feel the difference. When you are aware, your hand will be raised very slowly, very silently. And you will feel that the hand is filled with awareness. And when the hand is filled with awareness, your mind will be thoughtless. Because your whole awareness has moved to the hand. Now no energy is left to think. When you raise your hand automatically, mechanically, you go on thinking and the hand goes on moving. Who is moving that hand? Your robot. Move it yourself. So do it in the day, anytime, any moment, while doing anything. Take charge from the robot. Soon you will be able to get a mastery over the robot. But don't try with difficult situations. That's suicidal. And we always try with difficult situations. And because of difficult situations, you can never win. Start with simple situations where even if you are not so efficient, no harm is going to result. For example, we always try with difficult situation. One man thinks, I'm not going to angry. Anger is a very difficult situation. And the robot will not leave it to you. And it is better that the robot should do it because he knows more than you. You decide about sex, not to do something, to do something. You cannot do it. The robot will take. The situation is very complex. are so perfectly aware that you can tackle any complex situation without the help of the robot. The robot will not allow you. And this is a very necessary defense mechanism. Otherwise, you will make a greater mess of your life. If you go on taking things from the robot in difficult situations, try to start with simple things. Walking. Try with it. There is no harm. You can say to the robot, there is going to be no harm. I'm just walking. Taking a walk. And I'm not going anywhere. Just walking. So there is no need of you. I can be non-efficient. And then be aware and walk slowly. Be filled with awareness in your whole body. When 1 foot moves, move with it. When 1 foot leaves the ground, leave ground with it. When another foot touches the ground, touch the ground with it. Be perfectly aware. Don't do anything else with the mind. Just turn the whole mind into awareness. It will be difficult because the robot will interfere continuously. Every moment the robot will try, what are you doing? I can do it better than you. And he can do it better. So try it in non-serious things, non-complex things, simple things. Buddha has told to his disciples, walk, eat, sleep with awareness. And if you can do these simple things, then you know how to enter with awareness in difficult things also. Then you can try. But we always try with difficult things, then we are defeated. And then defeated feeling gives you a deep pessimism about yourself. You start thinking that you cannot do anything. That is very helpful for the robot. The robot will always help you to do something with it when you are in difficulty, because then you are defeated. And the robot can say to you, leave it to me, I always do it better than you can do. Start with simple things. Zen Buddhists, Zen monks have been so many times reported to have said, when Bosu was asked, what's your meditation, what's your sadhana? He said, when I feel hungry, I eat. And when I feel sleepy, I go to sleep. This is all. The man who was asking, he said, but this we all do. So what is special in it? Bosu repeated again. He said, when I feel hungry, I eat. And when I feel sleepy, I sleep. And that's the difference. When you feel hungry, your robot eats. When you feel sleepy, your robot sleeps. Bosu said, I. And that's the difference. If you become more aware with your day-to-day work, ordinary life, the awareness will grow. And with that awareness, you will not be just a mechanical thing. For the first time, you will become a person. You are not. And a person has a face. And the mechanical thing has many masks, no face. If you are a person alive, alert, aware, you can have an authentic existence. You are just a mechanical device. You cannot have any authentic existence. Each moment will change you. Each situation will change you. You will be just a floating thing with no inner core, with no inner being. Awareness gives you the inner presence. Without it, you feel that you are, but you are not. Someone asked Buddha that I want to serve humanity. Tell me how I can serve. Buddha looked that man very deeply, penetratingly, with deep compassion. And then he said, but where are you? Who will serve the humanity? You are not yet. First be. And when you are, you need not ask me. When you are, you will do something which happens to you, worth doing. Guruji has continuously insisted, because everyone comes with the notion that he is. Already he is. Someone came to Guruji and asked, I am very insane inside. My mind goes on in conflict, contradiction. So tell me what I can do to dissolve this mind, to have mental peace, inner calm. Guruji said, don't think about the mind. You cannot do anything about it. The first thing is to be present. First you have to be, then you can do something. You are not. What is mean by this, you are not? It is mean that you are a robot, a mechanical thing, working according to mechanical laws. Start being alert. Join awareness with anything you are doing. And start with simple things. The second question. Explain the meaning, preparation and process of mantra diksha. Mantra initiation, and what are the reasons that individuals must keep their mantras secret? First, try to understand what initiation is. What is diksha? It is a deep communion, a deep transfer of energy from the master to the disciple. Energy always flows downwards. Every energy flows downwards, just like water flowing downwards. The master, one who has attained, one who has known, one who has become, is the highest peak possible of energy, of purest energy, at the Everest of energy. This energy can flow downwards to anyone who is receptive, humble, surrendered. Because the surrendered attitude, the receptive attitude, deep humbleness to receive will be needed. Otherwise, you yourself are a peak. you are not a valley, and the energy cannot flow downwards to you. You are a different sort of peak, the peak of ego, not of energy, not of being, not of bliss, not of consciousness. You are a density of ego, of I-ness. You are a peak. With this peak, no initiation is possible. Ego is the barrier, because ego closes you, and you cannot surrender. To be a disciple, to be initiated, one has to surrender himself totally. And there is no partial surrender. Surrender means total. You cannot say, I partially surrender. It makes no sense. You are still there with your ego. Ego has to be surrendered. And when you surrender the ego, you become receptive, open. And you become like a valley. And now the peak can flow downwards to you. And I'm not talking symbolically. It is so actually. Have you been ever in love? Then you can feel that love flows actually between two bodies. It is an actual flow. Energy is being transmitted, transferred, received, given. Love is on the same level. You both can remain peaks of egos and still love can be. But with a master, you are not on the same level. And if you try to be on the same level, initiation becomes impossible. Love is possible. Initiation becomes impossible. Initiation is possible only when you are on a low level. Just humble, surrendered, open to receive. The disciple is feminine. Just womb-like, passive to receive. The master is the male factor in initiation. This secret of initiation now completely lost, because the more we are educated, the more civilized, the more cultured, the more egoist we become. And now to surrender has become very, very impossible. It has always been difficult, but now it is impossible. Initiation is a transfer of inner energy, actual energy, and the master can enter in you and can transform you if you are ready and receptive. But then deep trust is needed. More trust than in love is needed. Because you don't know what is going to happen. You are completely in the dark. Only the master knows what is going to happen. And what he is doing, he knows, you cannot know. And there are things which cannot be said, that what is going to happen. Because with human mind, there are many problems. One problem is this. that if something is said before it happens, it will change the happening. It cannot be said. So many things the master cannot say to you. He can do them to you, but he cannot say them to you. That doing is initiation. He actually moves in you, in your body, in your mind, cleanses you, changes you. The only thing required is your total trust. Because without it, there is no opening and he cannot enter you. Your doors are closed. You are always defending yourself. Life is a struggle. A struggle for survive, to survive. This struggle gives you a clothing. You are closed, afraid. You are afraid to be vulnerable. Someone may enter. Someone may do something in you. So you shrink to yourself. Remain closed. Just hiding behind. Constantly defending. In initiation, you have to lose this defense. This armor of defense has to be thrown. You become vulnerable. And the master can enter you now. For example, it is just like a deep love act. You can rape a woman. But you cannot rape a disciple. You can rape a woman because it is a bodily rape, and the body can be raped and entered without the assent, without the will of the woman. You can rape. It is a forced thing, and body is material. Things can be forced on it. Something just like this happens in initiation. The master enters your spirit, not your body. Unless you are ready and receiving, the entrance is not possible. A disciple cannot be raped because it is not a bodily question. It is a question of spirit. And you cannot force entry into spirit. No violence is possible with it. So when the disciple is ready and open, just like a loving woman, inviting and receptive, ready, in a deep let go, only then the master can enter and work. And centuries of work can be done in moments. You may not be able to do in many lives certain things which can be done in a moment. But then you have to be vulnerable, totally trusting. You don't know what will happen and what he will do inside you. A woman is afraid because sexual act is a journey for her into the unknown. Unless she loves the man, is ready to suffer, is ready to carry the burden of a child, 9 months carrying the burden of a child, and then to a life commitment. Unless she is deeply in love, she will not allow the man to enter her body. Because it is not simply her body, it is her whole life. When she is in deep love, then she is ready to suffer, to sacrifice, and to sacrifice and suffer in deep love is blissful. deeper is the problem with the disciples. It is not a question only of a physical birth, of a new child. It is his rebirth. He himself is going to the barn. He will die in a certain sense, and he will be born in a certain different sense. And this is possible if the master enters him. But the master cannot force it. No force is possible. Only the disciple can invite it, and that's the problem. A very great problem in spiritual discipleship. Because the disciple goes on defending himself, herself, goes on creating more and more armor around him. He behaves with his master in the same way he would behave with anyone in the world. The same defense mechanism goes on working. And then unnecessarily time is wasted, energy is wasted, and the moment is delayed, which can happen right now. But this is nature. And sometimes, even with great masters, disciples have missed the chance. Ananda, Buddha's one of the great disciples and the nearest, couldn't attain liberation while Buddha was alive. And Buddha was with Ananda for 40 years. And Ananda couldn't attain. And many who came after Ananda attained. And then it became a problem. And Ananda was one of the nearest, the closest. He was sleeping with Buddha, he was moving with Buddha. 40 years continuously, like a shadow, he was Buddha. He knew about Buddha as much as even Buddha might not have known. But he couldn't attain, he remained the same. And a very ordinary thing was the only barrier. Because he was a elder cousin brother of Buddha. Elder cousin brother. The elder. The ego. Buddha died. There was a great council to write whatsoever Buddha had said. It has to be written now. Soon. Those who lived with Buddha will be no more. So everything has to be recorded. But the council won't allow Anand, and only he knew. The greater experience, statements of Buddha, his life, his biography, was known to Anand. No one knew so much. But the council decided that Ananda cannot be allowed because he is still unenlightened. And we cannot regard his sayings because you cannot believe an ignorant man. He will not deceive. But with an ignorant man, nothing is reliable. He may think that this happened and he may relate it authentically as far as he knows, but he is a man who is not yet awakened. So in his sleep, whatsoever he has seen and heard cannot be believed. So only those will regard who have become awakened. Ananda was weeping just outside the door. The door was closed. And just on the door, he remained for 24 hours, weeping, crying, screaming. And they will not allow. These 24 hours, he was weeping, weeping. And then suddenly he became aware, what has been the barrier? Why? I couldn't attain while he was alive. What was the barrier? And then he went into his memory. 40 years long life with Buddha. Then he remembered the first day when you came to him for initiation. But he had one condition, and that's why he missed the whole initiation. He was really never initiated. He could not be initiated. He made a condition. He came to Buddha and he said, I have come to be a disciple of yours. Once I become your disciple, you will be the master and I will have to follow whatever you say. I will have to obey. But right now, I am your elder brother. And I can order you and you will have to obey. You are not the master, I am not the disciple. Once I am initiated, you will be the master and I will be the disciple. Then I cannot say anything. So before I become a disciple, these are my three conditions. Say yes to these three conditions, then initiate me. The conditions were not very big, but a condition is a condition. And your surrender is not total. Very small condition, very loving condition. He said, one, I will be with you always. You cannot say me to move anywhere else. While I am alive, I will be your shadow. You cannot order me, give me a promise, because later on, I will be just a disciple, and if you order me, I will have to follow. This is a promise given to an elder brother, that I will be with you. You cannot say to me to move anywhere else. I will be just your shadow. I will sleep in the same room you sleep. Second, whenever I will say that meet this man, you will have to meet. Whatsoever your reason of not meeting, you will have to agree. If I want that someone should be given your darshan, you will have to give it. And thirdly, if I say that someone has to be initiated, you cannot refuse. Give me these three conditions, promise me, and then initiate me. I will not ask anything again, because then I will be just a disciple. When he remembered weeping, crying before the door of the council, he went back into his memory. And then suddenly he became aware that the initiation was not there, because I was not receptive. Buddha agreed. He said, okay. And he followed three conditions his whole life, but Anand missed. The nearest one missed. And the moment he realized this, he became enlightened. That which couldn't happen with Buddha happened when he was no more. He surrendered. If there is surrender, even an absent master can help you. If there is no surrender, even a present, alive master cannot help you. So in initiation, in any initiation, still is needed. And mantra initiation means when you have surrendered, the master will enter you, your body, your mind, your spirit. He will move in you to find out a sound for you. Whenever you change that sound, you will be a different man in a different dimension. Mantra cannot be given unless you have surrendered totally. Because mantra giving means the master has entered you and felt the deep harmony, the inner music of your being. And then he gives a symbolic sound which is in harmony with your inner music. The moment you change that sound, you enter your inner music world. The inner harmony is entered. That sound is just a key. cannot give you a key unless I know what's your lock. Because a key is meaningful only when it can unlock. Any key will not do. And everyone is a particular lock. And you need a particular key. That's why mantras are to be kept secret. If you give your mantra to someone, he may try with it. That key will not suit that lock. And sometimes, if you force a wrong key in a lock, you can destroy the lock. You can disturb the lock. So much disturb it that when even a right key is found, it may not work. That's why mantras are to be kept absolutely secret. They are not told to anyone. That's the promise. The master gives you the key. It is a key for you only. You cannot go on distributing it. And that will be harmful for many. You will be allowed to give only when your lock is totally open. But then you will not give this key to anyone. Now you have become capable of entering into the other. Now you can feel the lock and you can devise a key for it. The key has always been devised by the master. One who doesn't know if there is a heap of keys may think all keys are the same. Very small differences, minute differences. Even the same word can be used differently. For example, Om. This has three sounds. A, U, M. If on the U, the mid sound, emphasis is given, it is a different key. If on A, emphasis is given, it is a different key. If on M, the emphasis is given, it is a different key. It will open different locks. That's why so much emphasis on exact use of the mantra, exact use of the mantra as it is given by this. So the teacher gives it in your ear. He changes it exactly as should be used. He changes it in your ear, and you have to become so alert that your whole consciousness comes to the ear. And then he changes it. It enters in you. And you can remember it now, the exact use of it. That's why individuals must keep their mantras secret. They should not be made public. They are dangerous. And if you are initiated, you know it. If really a master has given you a key, you know it. You treasure it like anything. You cannot go on distributing it. It can be harmful for others, and it can be harmful for you also. For many reasons. One, you are breaking a promise. And the moment the promise is broken, your contact with the master is broken. You will not be again in contact with him. The promise kept is a constant contact. Secondly, if you give the mantra to anyone and talk about it, it comes to the surface of the mind. The deeper roots are broken. It becomes a gossip. Thirdly, if you can can keep anything secret, the more you keep it secret, the deeper it goes. Bound to go deeper. It is said of Marfa that when he was given the secret mantra by his guru, the promise was there that the mantra is absolutely secret. You are not to talk about it. Then his guru appeared in Marfa's dream and he said, "What is your mantra?" In dream, Marfa kept his promise in dream. He refused. And it is said that because of the fear that someday in dream the master may come or send someone and I may be so asleep and the secret is broken and the promise is broken, he left sleeping at all. He will not sleep. He was not sleeping for 7-8 days. His master asked Marfa, "Why are not? I see you don't go to sleep at all. What is the matter?" He said, "You are playing tricks with me. You came in a dream. And you were asking the mantra. I cannot tell you even. Once the promise is there, it will not come out of my mouth, even in dreams. But then I became fearful, asleep. Who knows? Someday I may forget." If you are so aware to keep the promise that even in dream you remember it, it is going deep. It is going deep. It is entering inner realm. And the deeper it moves, the more it will be a key to you, because the lock is at the deepest layer. Try with anything. If you can keep it a secret, it will move deep. If you cannot keep it a secret, it will move out. Why you want to say something to someone? Why you chatter? Really, anything that you chatter, you are relieved of it. Once you say it, you are relieved of it. It has moved out. The whole psychoanalysis is nothing but this. The psychoanalyst is just listening and the patient goes on talking. It helps the patient, because the more he talks about his problems, inner conflicts, associated ideas, he is relieved of them. The reverse happens when you can keep a thing secret. At no moment you are allowed to talk about it. At no moment. It will enter deep, deep, and one day it will exactly hit the lock. One question more. In reference to the meditation techniques based on sounds, please explain the difference between the chaotic music played in your dynamic meditation and the Sikh or pop music of the West. Your mind is in chaos. That chaos has to be brought out, to be acted out. Chaotic music can be helpful. So if you are meditating and chaotic music is played or chaotic dancing is there around you, it will help your chaos to bring out. You will flow in it. You will become unafraid of expression. And this chaotic music will hit your chaotic mind within and will bring it out. It helps. Pop, jazz or other music, which are chaotic in a way, they also help something to come out. And that something is repressed sexuality. I am concerned with all your repressions. Modern music is more concerned with your repressed sex. But this is a similarity. I am not concerned only with your repressed sex. I am concerned with all your repressions, sexual and sexual. But pop music or other musics like that are so much influential in the West because of Christianity. Christianity has been repressing sex for 20 centuries. They have forced sex so much deep inside that every man has become deep down a pervert. So the sin that Christianity has done with man, his mind, the West has to relieve itself of it through music, through dance, through chaotic painting, chaotic poetry, in every dimension. In the West, mind has to be completely free somehow from the whole long past of repressive centuries. In every way they are doing it. All that is influential today is chaotic. But sex is not the only thing. There are many other things. Sex is the basic, very important. But other things also. Your anger is repressed. Your sadness is repressed. Even your happiness is repressed. Man as he is a repression. He is not allowed to do, really, he is not allowed to do anything. He is just to follow rules. He is not a free agent, just a kept slave. And the whole society is a big prison. And the walls are very shuttered. Glass walls, transparent, you cannot see them, they are, and everywhere they are, your morality, your culture, your religion, they are all walls, transparent, you cannot see them, but whenever you want to cross them, you are thrown back. This state of mind neurotic. Whole society is ill. That's why I so much insist on chaotic meditation. Relieve yourself. Act out whatsoever society has forced. Situations have forced on you. Act them out. Relieve them. Go through a catharsis. The music helps. Once you can throw out everything that has been repressed in you, you will become natural again. You will be a child again. And with that child, many possibilities are open. With you, everything is closed. When you become again a child, then only your energies can be transformed. Then you are pure, innocent. And with innocence and purity, transformation is possible. Perverted energies cannot be transformed. Natural, spontaneous energy is needed. That's why I insist so much on acting out things, so that you can throw the society out. The society has entered you very deeply. It has not left you anywhere. It has entered from everywhere. You are a citadel, and the society has entered from everywhere. Its police, its priests, they have done much to make you a slave. You are not free. And man can attain to bliss only when he becomes total freedom. To make you a total freedom, the whole society has to be thrown out of you. That doesn't mean that you are going to become antisocial. Once you throw the society out, once you become aware of your freedom inside, you can live with the society. No need to be anti. But now, the society cannot enter in you. You can move in it. You can act in it. But now the whole thing becomes just a psychodrama. You are acting. Now the society cannot kill you, cannot make a slave of you. You are acting knowingly. Those who become antisocial simply show that they are still bound with the same society. All the antisocial movements in the West are reactionary, not revolutionary. You are reacting to the same society. You are related to the same society in a reverse manner. You are standing on your head, that's all. You are doing a shirsasana. But you are the same man. Whatsoever the society is insisting, you are doing quite the contrary. But you are following the society still. This will not help. If you are anti, you will never be beyond this society. You are part of it. And if the society dies, you will die. Think of, in the West, what they call now the establishment, the society which is established, and the alternate societies of hippies or hippies or others. They exist as part of this establishment. If this establishment is dissolved, they will be nowhere. They cannot exist by themselves. They are just a reaction. You cannot create a society of hippies. Hippies can exist only as an alternate society with an establishment. Just a reaction. They cannot exist independently. So howsoever they may think that they are independent, they are not independent. They exist against the establishment. The establishment is their source, their life. Once the establishment is not there, they will be at a loss where to move. Whatsoever they are doing is given by the establishment. They go against it, but the directions, instructions are given by the establishment. If the establishment says short hair, you can be long hair. But if there is no establishment, then what to do? If the establishment says cleanliness, you can be dirty. But if there is no establishment and no fuss about cleanliness, you are nowhere. Establishment says this, you can do that, quite the against. But you follow the establishment. So antisocials are not revolutionary. They are reactionary, part and product of the same society, those who have moved against it. In bitterness, a meditator, a sannyasin, is not anti-society. He is beyond society. He is not against the establishment. He is neither for it. But he takes it non-seriously. He knows it is just a play. He moves in it like an actor. And if you can move in the society like an actor on the stage, it never touches you. You remain beyond it. So don't be for it, don't be against it. But how you can do it? You can do it only when you have thrown the society out of you. If it is there, then there are two paths open to you. Follow it or go against it. But you are bound to it. You are in bondage. One has to first clean oneself off society. Then for the first time you become an individual. Right now you are not. Just a social unit. When the society is thrown out, all the prisons thrown out, you are again back to your childhood. You have become innocent. And this innocence is deeper than any child can have. Because you know the fall also. And now you have risen again. It is a resurgence. You have experience. You have known the whole nonsense. Now you are again pure. This purity becomes the temple for the divine. Once you can throw the society out of you without any bitterness, without going against it, and being involved in any reaction, if you can simply throw society out of you, the divine can enter in you. With society in, the divine will remain out. With society out, the divine can enter. Because divine means existence. Society is a human local phenomena. Existence is greater infinite. It is not concerned with man, morals, traditions. It is concerned with the very roots of being. One has to be beyond society, not against, remember. And this chaotic method helps.